Now, normally the last hour of the working week is tough going, but I've actually really been looking forward to it this week because I get to share with you the most remarkable story of the boy who never gave up. That is the title of the new memoir recently released by Dr. Emmanuel Taban, who is a former resident of South Sudan, who came to this country in the most harrowing fashion as a very young man and then fought to build a life for himself here. You may already know his name because of his groundbreaking research on COVID-19 treatment options. He is a very highly respected pulmonologist, and we could easily have spent half an hour talking about his medical work, but that's not the focus of our story today. What I want to talk to him about is how he got here, physically how he got here to South Africa, but also figuratively how he got where he is in life, given the odds he had to overcome along the way. Dr. Taban, it's such a privilege to have you on the show today. Thank you for your time and welcome.
Thank you very much, Papa, and thank you for really having me at your show.
Now, we're going to chat for a few minutes, take a break to bring our listeners the traffic and weather, and then continue the conversation. So don't panic anybody if you hear us interrupt in a few minutes. We will continue the conversation. Dr. Taban, you were born in South Sudan, grew up in a small village called Locker Round. Life happy in your early childhood, but not an easy life, was it?
No, it wasn't an easy life. It was difficult, living in difficult condition, but that's all that I knew that particular moment, and I was happy.
Mm. You were one of several siblings being raised, I know, by a single mother. And your description in the book of how she fought and struggled and started her own side hustles and micro businesses to try and keep you all going is just remarkable. Do you think you're a lot like her? I mean, reading the book, I think you're a lot like her in terms of your resilience and your strength of character.
Well, I think I'm more like her, but maybe I'm a bit smarter. What probably made me more better was that I have an education.
Yeah.
In her case, she didn't have an education. And I think for me, education, says words of Mandela, is the only equalizer for you to be able to be in certain top form. And I think my mother didn't have an education. That's why probably she struggled, but she never given up. She was fighting through the end to make sure that we have a meal in the table.
And as you comment in the book, imagine what she might have done with her life if she had had the opportunity of an education. Emmanuel, your education was interrupted in your younger years continuously. It was a year on, a year off, because life was a story of raids and rebel activities. And then by the time your early teens came along, full-on civil war in your area with raids and shootings by rebels, etc. How much formal schooling did you actually manage to complete before you left South Sudan?
I did about 5 years of formal schooling, though within the 5 years that I did properly, there were a gap year, about one or two in between. But the total, I remember, was 5 years that I have to really have to persevere to get it through. And I think probably was one of the most important years in my life, the basic education that I really appreciate today, that probably laid the foundation for my life.
When that education was interrupted, it wasn't just about the loss of the education. That position left you and all other young men at risk of being recruited to become child soldiers. It's a fate you managed to avoid, but many of your friends and schoolmates didn't, did they?
Well, they didn't. I think most of children, unfortunately, in Africa, that they drift to premature death or suffering or aging, actually absolute nothing because of their education being interrupted. And I think for me, that's one of the major issues in Africa as poverty is concerned, that most of the children are not skilled enough, they're not educated enough for them to be able to make something out of their lives. And I think for me, that's not really a story for South Sudan, a story that happening even in South Africa and everywhere, that the school for kids are not normally given, you know, the quality of that education is never there. And I think, yes, most of my friends, that they're all suffering. They really have nothing in life. That's the reality.
Yeah. Now, Emmanuel, the Civil War caught up with you. At the age of 14, you find yourself accused of being a rebel spy, thrown into jail, tortured in jail, finally released, and you make the decision, I've got to get out of here. And you literally fled on foot, leaving everything behind you, took a wrong turn on the road and found yourself going in a totally different direction from when you meant to go, and ended up across the border in Eritrea. Talk to us about that moment when you realized where you were. I think you were all of 14 years old, completely alone in a strange country, and you recognize you've ended up somewhere you weren't even planning to go. What was that like for you?
Look, it was horrible because I think it was the first time that probably I got to feel that I was a foreigner, because everybody was lighter skin, we had darker skin, we got short hair, and everybody got long hair. And people spoke different kind of language, ate different kind of food. So there were kind of new reality that kicked in when I found myself in Eritrea. But at the same time, it was not that terrifying, because people were not that horrible either. They were very nice people that actually, they were very welcoming. So for me, it was a mix of emotions, where part of me, I wish I was home, but also part of me, because I now discover this new place with nice people that are friendly, and the food wasn't very bad. And also, of course, I've seen, and I think probably was the first time in my life that was also introduced to the good amenities like toilets, which I never seen before during my time in South Sudan, because we always use pit toilet.
Yeah.
And also, I just went outside to the bush just to relieve yourself. And I think there was quite a lot of perspective change in my life at that time in Eritrea. And I think for the most important thing, of course, was to always wondering, I start asking myself a question, how come this is possible? Because when I grew up in South Sudan, everything was lovely, because that's what I knew. Until when I went to Eritrea, I said, but look, like the world out there is different from what I know. And that's for me, that opened reality to my eyes. And that's why the point where I decided I was not going to go back, because after working all this journey, not going back to the circumstance.
Yeah. Now, the journey continued from Eritrea. You walked nearly another 3,000 kilometers to get to an uncle in Nairobi, Kenya, who took you in for a time but made it clear you couldn't stay long term. And that was where the magic moment happened, that South Africa came into your sights. Won't you share with our audience the quite funny story of what made you choose South Africa as your destination?
Well, I think I couldn't stay in Eritrea because the language, they speak Tigrinya, and I only could speak a pocket of English. So I needed to go to Kenya, hopefully, because I knew some of my uncles or relatives were in Nairobi. And I hope once, if I'm in Nairobi, because I studied English, I could get opportunity to get to Kenya. And it was very difficult. I went through a lot of hurdles, been in prison, spent 18 months, 6 weeks as a street child in Addis Ababa until I arrived in Kenya. And when I arrived 3 days, I was camped at my uncle's house until I was called for family meeting. And they actually wanted me to go to refugee camp. And that's when I made that instant decision after seeing in Coca-Cola can made in South Africa. And I just told him, you know what, I was actually going to South Africa. And that decision was born out of anger. Wasn't a decision that was well thought of. I never thought of it. But I just knew I'm going to go to South Africa, and I know it's in South, and I'm going to go. No matter how long it takes, what resources needed, I will take the first step and find myself in South Africa. And I think for me, that's what really opened up the doors for where I am today.
We're going to pause there to take the traffic and weather, and then come back to continue our conversation with pulmonologist Dr. Emmanuel Taban. So we leave him in Nairobi, Kenya, having seen the words "made in South Africa" on the side of a Coke can. And that was a moment which changed his life. We'll tell you how after this.
You're with Cape Talk.
We're back continuing our conversation with Dr. Emmanuel Taban, who is a leading pulmonologist, but also the author of The Boy Who Never Gave Up, A Refugee's Epic Journey to Triumph, written with Andrew Crofts, recently published by Jonathan Ball and available now. I'm getting a couple of messages from people who've already got it in their book club and are finding it an extraordinary story, as did I. Dr. Taban, when we left off, you were in Nairobi, had decided South Africa was your destination, and it was a long, hard trip to get here, via Tanzania, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe, finally arriving in Johannesburg. And again, on arrival in Johannesburg, you were struck by the difference between what you found in the big city and what you'd left behind. Take us back to that moment and what it felt like to arrive in Joburg.
I think that, number one, when I arrived in Joburg, that's one of the big impressions, of course, is the road. The fact that three cars could actually go in the same direction. And, of course, seeing the new cars, which we never seen them in South Sudan, because we have those all Land Rover for a long time, and we only got potholes. Mm-hmm. And that's it. There was, at that time when I left South Sudan, there was no tarmac road either, something that was new for me. And of course, arriving to Joburg Center, I was greeted with the Carlton Center building, which was now one of the tallest buildings that I ever seen in my life. It was kind of very, you know, it was impossible to imagine that human could build such kind of thing. And at the same time, what dismayed me was that in South Sudan, we couldn't actually build something even similar to that.
Yeah.
And dismayed us, you know, and I mean, after all, when you think about Carlton Center, most of it is built out of soil, out of bricks. And we had soil and sand, so then we couldn't do that. So for me, that bothers me quite a lot. But of course, there was feeling of excitement being in Joburg. And I mean, Joburg that time, it was a very clean city and it was well maintained. And it was kind of really the central business district that particular moment as compared to now. You know, mm-hmm. And for me, it was one of the very good eye-opening. And part of me, of course, was overwhelmed that I had my last money to spend the hotel and didn't know what to do next. And of course, the following day, what greeted me, of course, that I have to spend the first two nights, the following two nights on the flyover bridge in Els Park, on those flyover. And I think for me, that was probably the horrible time of my life. But of course, during that time when I stay under the bridge, there were a lot of other homeless kids who were also there. But of course, they were fighting over something or nothing at all. But the most important thing that I was just a child who was just stranded, mm-hmm. and I have not arrived. I was still on my journey, and I took it as one of the hardships that you could experience whenever you're in journey. So I wasn't really like the street kids who have arrived and who have seemed like they have no direction or no journey that mm-hmm. they are taking. And that for me was the difference until, of course, Bishop John Sandry picked me up from the street that particular moment.
Now, I'm going to leave it to our audience to read the rest of the story for themselves. Suffice to say that it was contact with a missionary group that led to Dr. Taban becoming Dr. Taban. It enabled him to finish his schooling, to win himself a place in a medical school, and to become a doctor, graduating with 3 distinctions and then going on to specialize in pulmonology. You comment in the book, Emmanuel, that probably makes you the most educated person ever to come out of your region of South Sudan. Does that make you feel proud or sad, or I guess a combination of both?
I think it's depressing, actually. The fact that for thousands of years, I mean, I've read the history of South Africa, the Bruderbund, for a long time. From 1902, most of them were, some people were professors, engineers at that moment. But in Africa, at that time, most Africans were really not educated. Most people were illiterate. Most people who had their documents were either having a bachelor's degree or so. So for me, that depressed me because up to today, as an African, we don't understand the benefit of education. We don't understand that education is the only difference between Europe and Africa, Europe and China. It's all education because we haven't taken education serious in our continent and try to make difference out of it, to try to educate the mind of our youth, to make them to that tomorrow they'll become a better leader. We haven't got that concept right. We give them substandard education and we expect them to be the best generation. I mean, that doesn't make sense. And I think for me, that's what it depressed me about, the fact that I'm now the top pulmonologist, the first car to come out of Equatoria, out of probably 2-3 million people. Why was there no such kind of, I mean, that specialty been there for many years? And I mean, even the set reality about South Africa, that we are about 12 blacks pulmonologists. And even out of 12, maybe five of us or six of us who are foreigners. So if you look at native South Africa, there are about 6 or 7. Again, you ask yourself a question. Where is the government? What do they think? Why aren't you producing enough black pulmonologists in this country? Where is the problem? Do people actually care enough to make sure that tomorrow we should be having those particular specialties? Do we really care enough about the skill that we need in the country? And that's for me, that's what depressed me in Africa. It's not only South Africa, but the rest of the Africa. We never think about tomorrow. We are all obsessed about today. And that's the reality.
Dr. Emmanuel Taban, I want to thank you so much for sharing that message with us. It is a book that speaks to the 3 core principles he believes in of passion, determination, and consistency being the path to success. It is an extraordinary book to read. I really highly recommend you pick up a copy, published in South Africa by Jonathan Ball, written by Dr. Taban with Andrew Crofts. It is called The Boy Who Never Gave Up. And there is so much more to the story and so much more struggle than we were able to encapsulate in those 10 or 15 minutes of conversation. You need to read it for yourself to truly understand the magnitude of what this man has achieved. The Boy Who Never Gave Up. Thank you again for joining us, Dr. Emmanuel Taban.